On October 15th, National Hispanic Heritage Month will wrap up in the United States, where conferences, exhibitions, and events over the last few weeks have celebrated the cultures and contributions of Americans whose ancestors came from Spain, Mexico, the Caribbean, and Central and South America. The U.S.'s ambassador to the Holy See, Miguel Diaz, is himself of Hispanic Cuban descent. He hails the community's valuable contributions to the political, social, and faith spheres in the U.S. and beyond.
Hispanic Heritage Month is a time to focus on the contributions that we Hispanics bring to our nation and to the world. I think ours is a rich history that comprises many intercultural and interreligious relations. And at a time when we face numerous challenges, challenges that have to do with embracing diversity, challenges that have to do with embracing others and others in terms of their religious differences and in terms of cultural differences, at a time when human migrations are on the increase across the world, the Hispanic community and the various Latino communities in the United States have a lot to offer to our world. We can dig into our experiences of living with the other, of living with human differences, of living with religious differences, and without idealizing those experiences, offering that rich tapestry, that rich mosaic for the sake of the common good.
Biblical scholar and new media expert Father Jean-Pierre Ruiz teaches theology at St. John's University in New York and edits the Journal of Hispanic Latino Theology. He explains that over the centuries, like other immigrant communities, however, Hispanics often bore the brunt of anti-immigrant and sometimes anti-Catholic sentiment. But he holds up the example of one Latino American who, in the 19th century, overcame discrimination to become an important source of unity for New York City's growing Catholic immigrant community.
Indeed, there has been discrimination, and indeed there has been significant discrimination. But this is nothing new. Let me take us back, if I may, to the 19th century, and let's place ourselves in front of the Church of the Transfiguration on Mott Street in New York's Chinatown. In the Church of the Transfiguration today, Sunday Mass is celebrated in Mandarin, in Cantonese, and in English, in all three of those languages, in the middle of bustling Chinatown in Lower Manhattan. There's a statue outside the Church of the Transfiguration of a revered priest who was the pastor of the Church of the Transfiguration. Now, you might think that the priest was Chinese. No, in fact, it was Father Felix Varela, a Cuban exile who left Cuba shortly on the heels of his being pursued by the authorities there because of his pursuit of Cuban autonomy and the pursuit of human rights in Cuba, found himself exiled in the Diocese of New York, where he became Chancellor of the Diocese of New York and pastor of the Church of the Transfiguration, where it was his principal responsibility during the time of his pastorate to attend to the needs of immigrants to New York, and that is to Irish immigrants in New York. So there has long been an anti-immigrant sentiment, a nativist sentiment in the United States vis-a-vis Catholics in the 19th century and with respect to immigrants from Latin America in the late 20th and now into the early 21st century. And it's that struggle in which Latino Catholics in the United States are currently engaged, looking at the model of people like Father Varela for the reality that Catholic communities can work to overcome that discrimination and to become part of society without losing their identity, without being assimilated, without losing a sense of what makes them distinctive within the Catholicity that is the gift of our reality.
You mentioned one Cuban priest and his impact on the community, the immigrant and non-community in the United States, but what about the impact on a socio-political level of the Hispanic or Latino American community there now?
Well, let me look at two cities. Let me look at New York and let me look at Los Angeles. Both of these major metropolitan areas, one on the east coast of the United States, one on the west coast of the United States, each of those cities has more than 2 million Latino residents. That's 2 million out of the more than 8 million in New York City. And in fact, in one county of New York City, the borough of the Bronx, Hispanics actually constitute a majority. Looking at Los Angeles, We're looking at many millions of Latinos, perhaps as many as 4 million in Los Angeles County and in the surrounding areas. And in Los Angeles County, we greet the very recent appointment of a Mexican-born archbishop, Archbishop José Gómez. This says something very powerful about the future of the church in the United States. No, let me take that back. Not merely the future of the church in the United States, but the actual present of the church in the United States. Because the present, in many areas, counts on a plurality of Latino Catholics. So there are lots of people praying in Spanish across the United States.
Many Latinos in the U.S. today end up in agricultural production, factory, and domestic work, filling a huge gap which Father Ruiz says most Americans are loath to fill themselves. Well, how valuable is their work, and what would happen if they all failed to show up for work tomorrow?
I recall the film and the reality called A Day Without Mexicans, so that if agricultural workers, if domestic workers, if landscapers, if workers in meatpacking and so on were to cease working, the United States would not be able to function. Now, there's a problem with that. There are many problems with that. First, the problem has to do with global political and economic realities that have forced people to emigrate from countries where, all other things being equal, they would have preferred to stay. They come because they must. They come because they need to support their families back in their countries of origin, and because in terms of the remittances that they send, those remittances make survival itself possible for millions and millions of people throughout Latin America. People emigrate and find whatever jobs they can. So the person who is washing the dishes in the back of a restaurant in New York City, the person who is doing roofing or construction work in New Orleans, maybe someone who is a degreed engineer with a master's degree or a doctoral degree in his or her own country of origin, but because of the circumstances of the economy and because the immigration system is deeply flawed and deeply broken in the United States, that person is forced to take whatever work is available under very often exploitative labor conditions in order to make survival possible for that person's family in their country of origin. So enormous sacrifices are being made for immigrants who underpin the service economy of a nation that has grown to being a knowledge-based economy and a service economy where manufacturing has largely disappeared, where high technology has pushed industry offshore and so on. And these are people who take jobs that other people wouldn't take. Who wants to pick vegetables? Who wants to handpick fruit? It's back-breaking work under every weather condition, with low wages and difficult working conditions. People do it because they must.
With a porous Mexican border, a hot topic on the U.S. political front, immigration sometimes gets a bad rap in a country that has prided itself on its own immigrant heritage. Many in the U.S. criticize what they see as the added financial burden that undocumented workers and their children place on society, something they see as unacceptable, especially in these times of economic crisis.
That's been advanced as one argument against immigration reform. But the very bottom line is that it's a specious argument, because even though many of these unauthorized immigrants are not working with the proper legal authorization, they're paying taxes. And in many cases, they're even paying into a social security system from which they themselves will never benefit because they're using falsified social security documents. At the same time, the kind of contribution that they're making to the service sector of the economy of the United States, I dare say that despite the terrible, terrible situation of unemployment and underemployment, I don't think that there would be too many people lining up to be migrant agricultural workers if that were their only job opportunity. I don't think that someone with a master's in business administration is going to take themselves to be picking vegetables somewhere or to be working in a poultry plant. But they want to be eating the vegetables and they want to be eating the chicken that someone else has picked and someone else has processed. So there is this strange double standard when it comes to people who are working for their own survival and for the survival of their families. There is, at the same time, I think, an unfortunate And whether it's deliberate or not, the effect is the same. The dehumanization of such alternately documented residents of the United States. And the dehumanization is latent in such expressions as illegals. Illegals. Well, there's no such thing as an illegal human being. Every human being, no matter where they are, no matter what their circumstances, is created in the image and likeness of God, and for that reason is endowed with an innate dignity that deserves to be respected. That's their right. It's their responsibility to live in accord with the dignity in which they've been created, and to create the conditions under which that's possible is the responsibility of others who are ultimately their brothers and sisters in the human family, whether or not they belong to the same faith community, whether or not they share the same values, whether or not they share the same national origin. There's the basic human dignity that, in many respects, is part of the struggle of the American national myth, that if the United States is a nation of immigrants, it has been traditionally and historically understood to be a place where people could come from places where they were deprived of their dignity and work according to the dignity that is theirs and work on behalf of the common good and work for the good of society, whether in the United, both in the United States and on a global scale. The U.S. bishops, in consonance with the teaching of the Universal Church, have consistently called for just and comprehensive immigration reform. What does this mean? Well, it recognizes, first of all, that while a sovereign state has the right and the responsibility to protect its borders, international human rights likewise recognize the right that human beings have to migrate, particularly to migrate in the case of political and economic need. And that right of people to their human dignity supersedes the right of any state to the policing of or to the maintaining of its borders. Well, what does this effectively mean? Well, it means a number of things. Consider, for example, the case of a young child brought by his or her parents across the border at a very young age, and someone who is an unauthorized immigrant, someone who doesn't have the proper documentation to emigrate legally into the United States. Presumably that child wants to go to school. There's nothing wrong with getting an education. After all, education is held in such high regard by the Latino community and by everyone. Is there anyone for whom education is not held in high regard? Well, the challenge is that as that child moves through the educational system, what happens when it's discovered that that child, that young person, doesn't have authorization to be present in the United States, that that person is alternately documented, so to speak? Well, the person, first of all, is put at risk of deportation, and the person having acquired an education is then not able to pay forward in terms of the contribution to U.S. society, in terms of contribution to the community, that that young person is absolutely willing at that point to give. It's for that reason that for several years, several legislators, U.S. legislators, have advanced legislation called the DREAM Act that would make it possible for such young people who've completed some higher education or who've served the nation in the armed forces to be placed on the road to citizenship. Unfortunately, that act has been stalled due to all sorts of unfortunate considerations, but it's my hope, it's the hope of many of us, that legislation like that will soon be signed into law by the president.
And a very warm thanks there to Father Jean-Pierre Ruiz from the Theology Department at St. John's University in New York.